Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Congress College. Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. You're listening to Congress College, where if you guessed it, we do our stuff, and that means we talk all about Congress. My name is Elizabeth Crist. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes, where we are going to break down what happened in the debates, what happened in the House of Representatives. We talk about everything Congress, and we do it twice weekly. On the Monday show, we usually outline the week in Congress, and that means we talk literally about what the Senate and the House plan to do. And then on the Friday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week, and we do it. Here's the reason why. I want each and every one of you, hi John, hi Bob, by the way, I want each and every one of you guys to be able to answer this really, really simple question. Were you representing Washington for the week? Because think about it. Those guys and gals in the House, those guys and gals in the Senate, they're representing you. They're representing me. They're talking or speaking for you and me. So don't you think we should at least have a general idea of what's going on? I do, and that's why I do. I also do the show to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? You want to give him a B or a C? You want to give her an A? Maybe an F. Unfortunately, I'm betting a lot of you guys want to throw around at this point. The site is free, and I pledge it always will be free. You figure out who you want to grade. Then you figure out what grade you want to give. And, of course, the grades I'm talking about are the A, B, C, D, or F. Just like the grades you got in school. And I'm here to tell you I got my share of Fs. What grade you want to give, and then the site's going to auto-prompt you to finish the grade by saying, typing a letter. It will auto-generate a letter that will start out, Dear Senator, let's say Rubio. Dear Senator Rubio, I gave you a B today, and you have to finish Y. Check your horrible speller. And you know what? You've just graded a member of Congress, and you've written a member of Congress, and they see them, folks. I can't stress this enough. GradeGov does not use the Senate or the House email system. That's just a software program. It just gives a data to the member of Congress. He or she has it set up once a week, once a day. How many letters you got on, and it uses keywords. Budget, Obamacare, Iran deal. They don't ever see your letter, folks, but on GradeGov they do. And they see your grade. And it grade averages all day long. Members of Congress go over there, take a peek. They're interested in what you and I think about them. So, as I said, tell your friends, tell your family about the free website, gradegov.com. All right, let's get started. Congress College always starts with either the Senator or the House of Representatives figuring out which one about it. I'm going to talk about the Senate right now. I'm going to talk about they failed to move the vote that would disapprove the nuclear deal. What happened, basically? Well, almost a party-line vote. The Senate and the House ended up, the Senate, four Democrats, but it was 58-42. Not near enough. They needed 60 because Harry Reid said, we're going to make you go the old-fashioned way. We're going to make you take 60 votes to shut off debate, and they only got to 58. They got Schumer of New York. He's a Democrat. These are Democrats, folks. Menendez of New Jersey, Manchin of West Virginia, and Cardin of Maryland. Well, Senator McConnell, majority leader, teeing up a vote for next week. plan on spending lots of time next week debating the disapproval resolution. Now remember, Corker-Cardin bill, which is basically the structure by which they are debating whether they're going to even disapprove the Iran deal or just let it go through. It says that all disclosure of side deals, amendments, codicils have to be included when the president signed the deal back in July. Once they're all included, all bundled up, then the Congress has 60 days to try to scuttle the deal. Well, the House of Representatives thinks that the deal was not complete because they left out the side deals. Let me let you listen to Speaker Boehner here for just a second about such a leak you made.
Speaker Boehner, I was at the rally yesterday about the Iran deal, and there were people with signs that said Boehner, McConnell, repugnant traitors. You had Ted Cruz calling you out. Donald Trump said that you weren't doing enough, as did Sarah Palin. What do you make of all these Republican candidates for president, like Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and Scott Walker, running against you and Mitch McConnell?
Listen, a lot of presidential candidates out there, they're saying a lot of things, and if I started to comment on what they were saying, I would spend all my time doing that. I'm focused on doing my job here, and I'm focusing on the priorities of the American people.
Does
Cruz
bother you particularly?
No.
Mr. Speaker. How are we to perceive this, you know, very quick turnaround on how you are handling the Iran bill, and in particular moving from a bill to disapprove now to approve, and that's not to be perceived a messaging bill, especially when you're going to have Democrats on the spot on 9/11 voting to approve of this deal, and then folks across the street at the NRCC turn back and say, this guy voted to approve this on 9/11.
Listen, yesterday, you know, we went to our members. Obviously, there are concerns about whether the president complied with the Corker-Cardin Iran Review Act. And clearly our members do not believe the president has complied with the law. Now, if the Senate is able to move the bill, we want to preserve our right to move a motion of disapproval. And as a result, what we'll vote on this week is a motion to approve the Iran Nuclear Act, which clearly will not pass.
But how is this not a messaging vote now? Because that was talked about prior to July.
Well, this is about.
Well, it basically what he's saying, and he's reserving the right to legal action. He's reserving the right to take him to court, to take the president to court, to say, is this really what you said it was under Corker-Cardin? Did you submit all of the pieces of the deal that you were supposed to, which, as I'm going to read from the resolution, one second, did you include appendices, codicils, side agreements, implementation materials, documents, guidance, technical or otherwise, understandings, and any related agreements, whether entered into or implemented prior to the agreement? All of that is supposed to be in the hands, bundled up in the pieces of paper that were sent from the White House to the Congress to start the 60 days. This is what the House believes was not included. And as I said, Speaker Boehner said on Thursday, it is, quote, very possible the House will pursue legal action against the Obama administration. Very, very possible. He also said, and you heard this, if the Senate's able to move a bill, then if they get a disapproval resolution out of the Senate, and remember the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he's going to next week, they're going to have a vote, at least one vote again next week, try it again, let's see. Then the Speaker will obviously have the same vote in the House of Representatives. In the meantime, they had a vote the other day, today, trying to Talbert felt about the Iran deal, and of course, it was a motion to approve, and it was defeated. Almost two dozen House Democrats joined House Republicans to defeat the Iran deal. Listen to Josh Ernst, the White House press secretary, kind of double down on the Iran deal. This is about a minute.
I believe that both Majority Leader McConnell and the Senate committee chairman who wrote the legislation codifying how Congress would consider the international agreement to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon have acknowledged is that the 60-day clock for Congress's consideration of that agreement expires on September 17th. And essentially, I've described previously that Congress's role here is not to provide their approval for the agreement, but they essentially had 60 days to play the spoiler. If the votes go the way that we think that they will, and I think everyone expects that they will, Congress's opportunity to play that role will expire next week. That will be good news, and it will mean that the international community can move forward with implementing the agreement.
What he means by next week is September 17th is the 60 days. If you believe the 60 days started when the agreement was handed over to Congress because it was complete, there's the question. Was it complete or was it incomplete? Was it missing the side deals? That's basically the question. Here's another question for Congress College listeners. You guys are smart. Help me out here. What's happened since July of 2013, other than 2 years have passed? What's changed? Iran more involved in supporting terrorism? Haven't they been helping the bad guys even more on a different level, higher level, more money, as much money as they had, even though we took a lot of their money? Listen to what was going on in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, quite frankly, two summers ago, July of 2013. The House overwhelmingly voted to add new sanctions to Iran and reduce Iran's trade. They voted 400-20 to expand the sanctions, to shut down trade. But again, July of 2013, the House voted 400-20 to expand sanctions, make it harder on Iran. And obviously, it maintains humanitarian exceptions for food and medicine. And over on the Senate side, Senator Menendez and Senator Mark Kirk, Menendez, a Democrat from Illinois. And this goes along in the winter of 2012, the Congress added in the Defense Authorization Bill major sanctions against Iran and foreign institutions doing business with Iran. Of course, a humanitarian exception was made for food and medicine. And also allowed the president to suspend it if he found it a matter of national security. And that's how he was going to suspend the sanctions anyway and do all of this anyway, is through some of these loopholes. So what's the difference? What happened between now and 2 years ago? To me, Iran's gone in the wrong direction. They've gone in the complete wrong direction. And yet the congressional Democrats, Senate Democrats, basically gave him the deal because the Senate wasn't able to scuttle the deal. They gave him the deal. They only had 58 votes. They needed 60 to at least bring it to a vote. Well, as Senator McConnell said, he's going to have another shot at it next. Senator Cornyn, the Senate Republican whip, has said he'll spend a lot of time next week on this, so we'll have more time to talk about this maybe on Monday. What's going on in the states? I love this, folks. 15 Republican governors are rallying to try to stop state money going to Iran. They're doing it. They're frustrated. They're frustrated with Washington. This is what I love, folks. I talked about this on Andrea Shea King's show this week. What's wrong with our 31 Republican governors? Why does everybody have to look towards Washington? Washington right now is so twisted into a pretzel because of what Barack Obama is doing. We're going to talk about what he's doing the odds again in a minute. You're going to flip. But why not use these governors? 15 states have said they're going to do what they can do. Okay, let's go back to Congress here for a second. Are they running out of time? Are they running out of days to do the appropriations process that funds the federal government? There's basically about 8 days left. There's some Jewish holidays sprinkled in between now and September 30th. The Pope is going to meet with Congress on September 24th. They'll have a visit from China, I think it's the next day. So they're going to have to start talking about how they do the continuing resolution or the omnibus appropriations bill. Well, Ted Cruz is already talking about it. Remember when Ted Cruz called Mitch McConnell a liar on the Senate floor? Well, it floored me. People that have been watching the Senate and the House for years, it's the cardinal rule against Ronald Reagan. And Senator McConnell never really addressed it, neither did any other of the senators other than the ones that were in the room to say it just wasn't true. But they didn't counter with the lying. But I think this is of this counter. Here's what's going on. Senator Cruz says he's got a strategy to defund Planned Parenthood. He's going to use government shutdown. He says it's all about doing the right thing and following through on Republican vows to conservative voters. Here's what some of his colleagues say about this strategy. I don't want to use a failed tactic for political purposes, knowing that it's not going to succeed. That's Dan Coats, the Republican from Indiana. Here is Kelly Ayotte, who says there are not enough votes to even get to 60 in the Senate. Even if you could get by that hurdle, the president's going to veto it, and we certainly don't have 67. That's Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, Republican. So I guess I would ask, what's the strategy for success? I'd rather develop a winning strategy than one that is guaranteed to lose. That's Senator Ron Johnson, the Republican from Wisconsin. So I guess we're going to have to see what's going on with the appropriations process. They don't have that many days. We talked about just a minute ago, and we'll talk about it in the coming handful of days. There aren't a lot of days left. Okay, we talked about Washington being twisted in a pretzel. Why is that? Because the president is burning the midnight oil 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. He's got all of his agencies, all of his departments, all of every commissioner's, small, large, trying to figure out how to implement his changing of America, his major transform of America. Well, the IRS is at it again. July 1, nation, new rule. Listen to this. If you are a small business with fewer than 50 employees, $100 a day per employee, or $36,500 per year, that's for one employee. If you help that employee pay for some of their health care, how about you help fund their health savings account? Or you do some kind of matching thing. I am not making this up, folks. $100 a day. This is for small businesses, people that have 50 or under employees that were exempt from Obamacare. So they're exempt from having to purchase Obamacare for their employees, which we know is killing some of these companies that have over 50 employees and are having to buy all this health insurance. But the ones under 50, if they were going to help their employees, well, there you go. They're going to get fined $100 a day per employee. Now, some states are starting to warn employers about this new rule from the IRS. The Mississippi Department of Insurance is one of those states, for example. They quote, "all businesses for providing the only health insurance support many can afford, a contribution to help employees pay premiums for their individual or their family policies, or to help finance direct payments for medical services." That came from the Mississippi Business Journal. You know, the National Federation of Independent Businesses thinks that this is bizarre. I quote, "there is no real justification for penalizing small businesses that want to do what the law's strongest supporters claim to want, which is to help employees obtain coverage or to pay medical bills." You think this is going to be part of the reconciliation bill that's going to make it out of the Senate soon? And I want to be my soon, either late winter or early next spring. I think the repeal of the Cadillac tax, which is in Obamacare also, might be part of that. So we're going to watch that. We'll watch that really carefully. All right, I'm going to have a little fun here, let's go over to presidential politics. Will Biden, take a listen to this. This is Vice President Biden on Stephen Colbert for a second.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Be careful what you wish for.
Now, as I said,
well, that was a little bit of a tease because he didn't really answer it. He just didn't answer it. So I guess he's still thinking about it, but that's basically was his answer. I don't have an answer. He's still thinking about it. Glenn Beck was in D.C. with Donald Trump and a couple of others at the Capitol. This was the Iran nuclear rally. He went off on Donald Trump. Beck said that he called him a third grader. He said that, I'm telling, quote, dealing with Donald Trump is like the third grader, and I'm not dealing with a third grader anymore because the world is on fire. You want to come on my show? Great. You don't want to come on my show? Great. I don't really care. Enough of the third grade politics. Grow up, Donald Trump. Grow up. I think that's code, folks, for egotistical. Now, let me tell you what... What Bobby Jindal has said. But before I do that, have you heard what happened to Hillary Clinton? She's down to 37% support. 10-point drop since August. Bernie Sanders is at 27%, and Biden's at 20. He's not even in the race. 10 points since August. She is dropping like a rock, folks. Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, man, he threw the book at Donald Trump. He was at the National Press Club in Washington, and Louisiana governor, he said he was an egomaniac, a madman, he has no principles, and risks costing the party its chance to regain the White House. Jindal said, the silly season is over. It's time to get serious about saving our country. It's time to send Donald Trump back to reality TV. Now, I don't know. This makes me laugh. Listen to what he said. This is very, very quick. And then we're going to get to a little serious matter about what today is, which is 9-1-1. This is after he said all of that at the press club. He called him a narcissist, a carnal act. And he said the Republican candidates kissing up to Trump are making a mistake. But then he was asked this. This is very, very quick. You got to listen to it. I don't know. It makes me laugh. Here you go.
Ooh. He said some things in Rolling Stone about Carly Fiorina that have attracted a great deal of attention. How do you respond to this?
Yeah, I think it's pretty outrageous for him to be attacking anybody's appearance when he looks like he's got a squirrel sitting on his head. I think he should stop attacking other people's appearances.
He's got a squirrel sitting on the top of his head. I don't know why I find that so hilariously funny. Well, it kind of does look like he's got a squirrel on the top of his head. All right. I always do this at every airing of Congress College. Get your paper, get your pencil out. We are going to deal the president's daily schedule for today at 8:45. The president and the first lady spent 6 minutes in silence to mark the 14th anniversary of 9-1-1. Daily briefing. 11:45, he met with Secretary Kerry. 2 o'clock, he went to Fort Meade. He held a town hall meeting with service members at 3, and then he's back at the White House. That is it, folks. That is it for our president today, marking the 14th anniversary of 9/11. Speaking of 9/11, do you remember that day? Do you remember the day of the week that we were attacked, September 11th of 2001. It was a Tuesday. So the day before that was a Monday. It seemed like a month ago, after that Tuesday that marked 9/11, that we can't even begin to remember what it felt like. You see, let's think about this. Monday, September 10th, we all believed we were safe and secure. September 11th, we were not. How about on Monday? Most of us knew and trusted that our America was pretty simple. We were innocent and pure. On Tuesday, we lost that innocence. On Monday, many of us thought our heroes were teachers, rock stars, movie stars, maybe politicians. On Tuesday, we knew who our heroes were. They were the people that were first responders in New York, in D.C., and the passengers on Flight 93. On Monday, most of us didn't even think about being brave. On Tuesday, we found out exactly what that word really meant. On Monday, we all lived in the USA. On Tuesday, we all belonged to the United States of America. Monday, we complained about having to wait in line at the grocery store. But on Tuesday, we waited in line for hours to give blood. On Monday, most of us went to work with our usually Monday morning blahs. Tuesday, over 3,000 of us went to work in New York and D.C. and just boarded planes but didn't come home. Today is 9-1-1, 14 years later. We need to pray for courage, strength, and wisdom for our leaders and for all of us. We also need to honor all of those who lost their lives that day. For those that have lost their lives since then, battles that resulted from those cowardice acts of 9/11. We may not feel like we're honoring them in a fitting way, but I believe if you just bow your head and pray, maybe we can stand together, and I know we will not be beat. How many of you remember what you were doing that day? I bet you all do. I know I do. You remember Alan Jackson wrote very soon thereafter, "Where were you when the world stopped turning?" I'm going to play that for you all. Remember a first responder. Say thank you to a police. Say thank you to the military. Think about it and do about it all weekend. And you know what? Hug your family. Hug your friends. Have a blessed, blessed weekend. Remember to pray for our nation. Enjoy Alan Jackson. And you know what, folks? I'll talk to you on Monday, so stay tuned.
Where were you when the world stopped turning? That September day, out in the yard, your wife and children working on some stage in L.A. Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones? Pray for the ones who don't know. Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out in pride for the red, white, and blue, the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer? Look at yourself and what really matters. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus, and I've talked to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning that September day?